preaching a message this morning. I don't know who was here on Easter. Who was around at Easter? Man, Easter was amazing. It was our biggest attendance Easter ever in the history of the church. And we had people getting baptized. We had over the weekend 11 people give their hearts to Jesus over the weekend. Come on, I think that's something to get excited about. We had 150 people go through our journey to the cross in the lead up to that, and many people, probably the overwhelming majority of people, were deeply, deeply, deeply moved as they came face to face with the reality of what Jesus had done for them. And let me tell you, I might have been physically exhausted, but my spirit was rejoicing because of what Jesus has done. But that was then, and this is now. How many know that we can't just live in Easter? We can live in the truth of Easter. We can live in the everything that Easter represents. But now we have to go on living. And I want to speak a message to you this morning that I've simply entitled this. It's following Jesus when it doesn't make sense. Following Jesus when it doesn't make sense. Now, if you've been around in our church since the beginning of the year, you would know that our theme for this year is the words of Jesus, where he said, "Follow me." And that's all great and wonderful and dandy when everything makes sense, when everything's logical, when everything fits into our mindset and those things. But it's a little bit tougher when things don't make sense. It's a little bit tougher when there's things that Jesus is maybe asking of you that aren't always logical, don't always fit into our scientific mindset, don't always have a predetermined outcome in our eyes. In his they do, but in our eyes, we can't necessarily see what's going to happen. It's actually defying every sense that we have. It can be extremely difficult to follow Jesus in those situations. And yet over and over again throughout the scriptures, we see God asking people to do exactly that, to follow him even when it doesn't make sense. How many of you love to know everything up front? Come on, I know you're out there. Yes, come on, just confess it. You like to know everything up front. Well, you're gonna love my message. My message is just for you. Because sometimes following Jesus, you're not gonna get all the A, B, C, all the way through the Z. You're gonna have to just trust and have faith and believe and just determine to follow him no matter what. You know, over and over, I was thinking about this through the scriptures, and we see the Lord asking people to do things like this, to follow him even when it didn't make sense. Think about Abraham back in the Old Testament, who God says to him, "Leave your home." And he says to God, "Where am I going?" And God says, "I'm not going to tell you. You're going to find out when you get there." And he says, "Well, who are you?" And he says, "Well, you'll find that out as well on the way." You know, and Abraham, guess what he does? He does it. He follows. Sometimes we've got to do some things when they don't make sense. God said to Noah, "Build an ark." Noah had no idea what an ark was. He didn't even know what rain was. And there he is being asked to do this crazy, nonsensical thing. But he chose, we know, to follow God anyway. Moses, as he's standing in front of the arm of the people of Israel, having fled from captivity in Egypt, they're standing at the Red Sea, and they're aware that Pharaoh and his armies are chasing them down, ready to come and get them to bring them back in captivity. And God says to him, "What I want you to do, Moses, just lift your arm and watch how I'm going to part the seas." I can imagine Moses in his head, he's kind of going, "God, that doesn't make sense. Can't you see that there's an enemy chasing us down? Can't you see that there's this impending disaster? It doesn't make sense to be doing what you're asking us to do." But he says, "Follow me and watch what I will do." We see David. God says to him as a shepherd boy who's out in the fields. He wasn't even worthy of being with his brothers and all the other people of Israel who are fighting. There's this massive giant, Goliath. You may know the story. And the armies are frozen because he was a giant. He was challenging the people of Israel to battle, and no one wanted to take him on because he was such a warrior, so overwhelming. And little old David, God speaks to David. Says, "David, I want you to go to the battlefield, and I want you to take your stones and your sling with you. That's all that you've got. I don't want you to wear the armor of the king that he's going to give you. What I want you to do is just go as yourself and watch how giants fall when you follow me." You see, when things don't make sense, God sometimes does his best business. Joshua and the Israelites, when they were marching into the promised land as God had told them to go and take hold of that inheritance that God had for them, they crossed over, they came to this fortified city called Jericho. And it was such a fortified city that it was, and God says to them, do this. This doesn't make sense. He says, I want you to march around the city for 6 days saying nothing. How many of you know when you're a warrior, that's not exactly the kind of stuff that you want to hear? Oh no, we need to fight. We've got to fight. Say, no, don't fight. Just walk around the walls six times. And then on the seventh day, God's number seven, on the seventh day, walk around the city seven times. And then on the seventh time, lift up a shout, sound the trumpets. And he says, watch how that which seems impenetrable and impossible crumbles. See, what do you do when Jesus says, follow me, and it doesn't make sense, you follow him? Naaman, a guy who was the leader of the Aram people, the Aram army, he has leprosy. This is all in the Old Testament. He has leprosy, and he goes to the prophet Elisha, and Elisha says to him, he says, hey, what I want you to do to be healed, and Elisha says, this is what God has told me to tell you. You need to go wash in the Jordan River seven times. Seven again, God's number. But Aram's angry because he wanted a big show. He said, no, I just want the prophet to declare over me healing. I want the prophet just make a big show and just in a moment, just do it. Instantaneous generation that we are. And eventually those around him convince him and say, hey, why don't you go and do what the prophet said? And so he goes and bathes in the river seven times and he comes out the seventh time healed. You see, what do you do when things don't make sense? You follow him anyway. And it didn't only just happen in the Old Testament, it happens in the New Testament. We see Jesus when he's at a wedding. Who loves a wedding? Come on, weddings are great. The great times of celebration. And there's this wedding that he goes to, and at a certain point his mom comes to him and says, we've got a problem. The wine has run out. I mean, let's be honest, it wouldn't be an Aussie wedding without wine. The wine's run out. What are we going to do? And so Jesus says, okay, come on, just bring a whole lot of jars and fill them with water. I can imagine everyone there saying, Jesus, we don't need water. I know this is a Christian wedding. We don't need water. We need wine. And Jesus says, hey, that which doesn't make sense, do it anyway. And so they do it. They bring these vases. And then miraculously, we know the story is that water's turned to wine, not just any wine, but the best wine. You see, when it doesn't make sense in following Jesus, do it anyway. We see with the feeding of the 4,000 and the 5,000 in the gospel with just a few loaves and fish. And God says, just follow me what I do and see how all will be satisfied and fed. We see how he spits on the ground and makes mud and puts it on the eyes of a blind man and says to this blind man, go and wash off that thing in the pool of Siloam. Go and do that. And the man goes and does it. And as he does it, it doesn't make sense. He's healed. You see, following Jesus, sometimes it's not always going to make sense. When he's standing at the tomb of Lazarus, his good friend who had died and passed away, and he's there and he's talking to Lazarus' sister and he says to her, he says these words, he says, I am the resurrection and the life. And he comes 4 days later, it's 4 days after Lazarus has been in the tomb, and he comes and he gets in and he lifts his eyes to heaven and he prays and then he calls, he says, roll away the stone. They roll away the stone and he calls Lazarus out. I can imagine what they were thinking at the time. We're like, this doesn't make sense. What are we doing? It doesn't make sense. He's dead. He's been dead not for 1 day, not 2 days, 4 days. This doesn't make sense. But following Jesus doesn't always make sense. But following Jesus when it doesn't make sense often is where some of the greatest miracles are. And I could go on and over, but we see, again, the Lord asking us to follow him when it doesn't always make sense. I remember when we came to Canberra to come and pioneer a church, and that was 16 years ago, and it seems like yesterday at one level. Can't believe it's 16 years. We moved up from Adelaide, and we came, and to many, it just didn't make sense. It didn't make sense to do what we were doing, and in some, indeed, at the kind of everyday level, there's justifiable reasons for some of that stuff. Because we had just relocated only a couple of years before from South Africa. Our young family brought them to another nation. They just settled into a great Christian school. We're just making friends. We're just getting established in there. We had bought our first bit of Australia. Well, the bank had bought the first bit of Australia. We had a little part of that. But we bought our first piece of Australia, which was an incredible thing, and we're enjoying that. It wasn't the best time. The market back then wasn't a great time to be selling anyways. And then God says to us, come to Canberra. The market in Canberra back in those days was almost double what it was. The housing market was almost double what it was in Adelaide. And so we came here knowing that. We didn't have any jobs. We didn't have any friends. We didn't have any people here. There was nothing that was going on. In fact, we didn't even have a house to stay in when we actually arrived. All of that kind of fell in only once we did it. There was a whole lot of stuff. People in Adelaide, friends of ours, were saying, why Canberra? Yeah, there's a lot of people that sometimes think, why Canberra? I mean, we're living in Adelaide, a beautiful city. I said, yes, it is, but God's got plans. And all we had was a God word that said, hey, there's a vacuum here waiting to be filled. You've heard me say that many times. And so we came with that word, and all that, we didn't have anything going for us. I don't believe we were God's first pick necessarily. I mean, we were from another nation. We had funny accents. I mean, I don't have an accent anymore. I'm Aussie all the way. Yeah. I'm a bit of a mongrel because I was born in England, raised in South Africa, and now I'm Australian. So I've got a little bit of everything kind of going on. But, and it just didn't make sense. But God. But God. I'm so glad that we didn't just excuse ourselves out of doing what God had called us to do by allowing all of those reasons for us not to respond to Him. That would explain our way out of not doing what He had called us to do. I'm so glad that we had something of this understanding that even when it doesn't make sense and He said, follow me, you follow Him. Yes. And I'm sure many of you have got similar stories in your own life. But today I want to look at an example that Jesus Himself demonstrated. This is while He was walking with His disciples. He was teaching them about what it meant to follow Him. And there's this incredible moment that some of you may be familiar with, some of you may not have said, but this is a story, and you may have heard it, of Peter where he walks on the water. And I want to read you from, we're going to pick it up in verse 22 of chapter 14 of Matthew. And you can follow on the screens as well. And we do have an app that has the notes in there as well that you can make your own notes and check it out as well. Verse 22. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get out of the boat and go on ahead of Him to the other side while He dismissed the crowd. And after He dismissed them, He went up on the mountainside by Himself to pray. And later that night, He was there alone, and the boat was already considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. I mean, I would have loved to have been there and seen that. When the disciples saw Him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. Imagine that here in Canberra, Jesus walking out on Lake Burley Griffin. It's probably quite possible, actually, with the amount of stuff that's in there, but anyway. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I, do not be afraid. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink and cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately Jesus reached out His hand and caught him. You of little faith, he said, why did you doubt? And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. And then those who were in the boat worshipped Him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. I mean, that's the ultimate of things that just don't make sense. And what I see in this account here is this first point, which is this, is that following Jesus starts with obeying Jesus. You know, it says they were setting out on this boat. Why were they setting out? They had just seen these incredible miracles. 5,000 people, if you go read what happened before that, 5,000 people get miraculously fed. Things were happening. Things were going on. You would be thinking, let's stay here. This is where it's happening. This is where all the good stuff's going on. This is where God is moving. There's clearly something going on here. It's supernatural. And it just didn't make sense for them to get in a boat and head to the other side. And Jesus said it was immediately after they saw this miracle. And I wonder if you've ever thought about that. Why was that? But if you go look at the account in John chapter 6 of the same thing that was happening, you'll see there's a little bit of information in there that sheds some light in it, because it says when the people who were there, when they were feeding the 5,000, saw the miraculous things that happened, it says they tried to make Jesus their earthly king. See, the Jews were expecting there to be a Messiah that came, an earthly king that would come and rescue the nation. But who Jesus was, he wasn't just an earthly king, he was a heavenly king. He was the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And he knew that rather than just stay there and get all the accolades and get these people to make him a physical king, he said, no, there's something far bigger that I'm on about. And it's better for me to leave than to be flattered by the accolades of all of these here. You see, it's not the here and now that defines your worth and your value and your future. It's about what God has got in store for you that makes all the difference. Don't be flattered by power and fame and success. Man, I sit with people all the time in this city where you've heard me say we've got some of the most gifted, most talented, the most intellectual people that you can imagine, but let's not be fooled by what the world tries to say it's all about. It's not about following him, it's about following Jesus first and foremost. There will always be those voices that are going to be saying to you, hey, it's better for you to stay exactly where you are. You don't really want to follow Jesus. You don't really want to commit to that. You don't really want to obey what he's saying. It's better for you to stay. But the Bible says obedience is always better. Obedience to Jesus is always better. 1 John chapter 5 verse 3 says, this is love for God, to keep his commands. And his commands are not burdensome, for everyone born of God overcomes the world. What's interesting, if you look at the two accounts here in Matthew and also in John, you begin to realize that when they set out, it says they were setting out at first what they thought was a fishing village on the other side, a fishing village that was called Capernaum, just a humble fishing village. That's where they thought they were going. But actually, if you read this account of Matthew, it says they didn't actually end up there. They end up at a place called Gennesaret. Gennesaret means, it literally means garden of riches. So they set out for a humble fishing village, but they land up in a place that's garden of riches. It was known for its fertile soil and its beauty. You see, God's desire for your life, even when we're setting out, when we follow him, is always to take us to a garden of riches. A place of abundance, a place that it's not about how much you have in your bank accounts that he's talking about. It's knowing the abundance of spirit that can only be found in Jesus Christ. It's about knowing that deep love in him, a place of, but it starts with obedience. If they were not in the boat, they wouldn't have got to that place. Don't you love that they set out to where they thought they needed to be, this humble fishing village? They were all fishermen. They thought, that's the obvious place for us to go. We're going to go to the fishing village. That's what we know. And so they decide to set out there, but God decides to take them somewhere else. Yeah. Isn't that so true of our lives sometimes when we set out and we think we know? Yes. But sometimes things don't always make sense. And they land up in this place. You know what happened in the place of Gennesaret? If you go read the account, it says when they're there and Jesus is with them, it says people were literally getting healed. It says not just some of them, all of them, as they just touched the cloak of Jesus. Wow. See, when it doesn't make sense to follow Jesus, follow him anyway. So it starts with obedience. But the second thing I see in this account that's important to understand is that storms of life will come. The storms of life will come. The winds and the wave, it says, were buffering them and they were straining. It was probably hard work. They probably felt like they were probably going backwards more than they were going forwards. And Jesus himself said these words in John 16 from the Amplified. I love this. He says, I've told you these things so that in me you may have perfect peace and confidence. In the world you will have tribulation and trials and distress and frustration. But be of good cheer. Take courage. Be confident. Be certain. Be undaunted. For I have overcome the world. I have deprived it of its power to harm you and have conquered it for you. God never promised you that you're never going to face challenge. He says, know that I'm going to be with you in the challenge. Sometimes following him, it's going to involve storms of life going to come, but you got to know sometimes they're necessary. Sometimes God wants to use them. Do you know that there's typically two types of storms that God allows in our life? There's a storm of correction, like what we see happening with Jonah. Jonah in the Old Testament, where he was trying to run away from the purposes of God. And he tries to outrun God, and God sends a storm to bring him back on course and to make sure he reconnects with God. Sometimes that's what a storm is about in our lives, us coming back to what we should be on about. But then we get a second type of storm, which is the storm of perfection, which is what this storm is that we're reading about here. Which is here where God actually says, because they were being obedient, they were following God, they were doing what he told, and the storm came up. Why? Because God was wanting to teach them something. He was wanting to mature them, grow them. He was wanting them to have a deeper understanding and revelation of what it was about. Because in Matthew chapter 8, if you read a little bit earlier, they had been through a storm before with Jesus in the boat with them. Now they were going through a storm without Jesus in the boat. They were having to learn a new level of faith. There was a new thing that God was trying to teach them about what it means to follow him even when it doesn't make sense. So when you find yourselves in those storms, ask yourself, Jesus, what are you trying to teach me? And so storms of life would come, but what I love about this account is this next point is that Jesus came to them in the storm. He always comes to us in the storms of life. Maybe it's not always at the times that we think, but he knows best. He waited in this account until the boat was far off. In fact, some commentators reckon it was about 3.25 miles offshore. And it was kind of in this place where human intervention was now impossible. And here they are, the storm comes up and he comes to them in their time of need, walking on water. Man, that would have been cool to see. Jesus walking on water. I was actually laughing. Nathan was telling me, if many of you would know, that he got airlifted a few weeks back. How many weeks ago was it? I don't know, just some time ago. And your wife probably knows the hours and the days. Yeah. Anyway, but he gets airlifted. You might know the story. Chat to him about it, but they got airlifted. And he said, while we were in the water, after our canoe had capsized and we were praying and all those kind of things, he said, Dad, I was thinking maybe this is my moment to walk on water. And I'm like, dude, you're barely managing to tread water. We had a bit of a laugh because that's what you do when serious stuff happens. But I love his faith. I love the fact that he was kind of saying, actually, hey, God, maybe there's a supernatural moment. And the supernatural miracle is everyone came out of that alive. There was a miracle that took place there. But why, have you thought about why Jesus walked on water? Was he just showing off, hey, here's my new party trick. Look at me. Now, it wasn't that. It wasn't just a party trick that he was just showing them. I believe that what was going on here was that he was showing the disciples that the very thing that they feared, the wind, the waves, the storm, was the staircase for him to come to him, was the staircase for the supernatural. And sometimes the very things that we fear, the storms, the winds of life, and they come against us, God says, hey, just follow me even when it doesn't make sense. And that's going to be a stairway for my supernatural power to break out in and through your situation. I love that. I love that God, Jesus, is showing them this very story over and over again. Have you thought about why the disciples didn't recognize Jesus? It's because they weren't looking for him. They weren't, they'd walked to him, but they weren't in this moment looking for him. They were looking at the storm. They were looking at the waves, and when he came, they thought immediately their conclusion, it's got to be a ghost. See, faith and fear don't coexist. God says, hey, my perfect love casts out all fear. I want you to be a people that don't live in fear, but actually live in faith. It doesn't mean that you don't deny reality. The truth is that we're called to live in faith. And Jesus says immediately to them, take courage, it's I. Do not be afraid. You see, that's what we get from Jesus when things don't make sense. He says, hey, even though it may not make sense for you to follow me right now, even though what I'm asking of you might seem beyond you, do not be afraid. Take courage. I've got you. And I draw some strength from that, that he's there in the midst of the storm. And I love then what it then goes on to show us in the stories that Jesus then calls us to walk with him on the water. The photo focus now shifts in the account from the disciples to Peter. And Peter says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water in verse 28. And Jesus says to him, come. If you go look at the original language of that particular text, the Greek word, the Greek that Peter actually uses there, it literally means, Lord, if you give the command of a king, I will come. So he's kind of recognizing that Jesus, you're the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, and if you just command it, I will come. And I believe that God, Jesus, the King of Kings, is calling many of us to get out of the boat and to walk on water, maybe not physical water, but maybe there's water in your life that represents something that he's saying, hey, are you prepared to get out of the boat and walk on water with me? You know, Peter had to get out of that boat. He had to put his foot in the water. I wonder what he was saying to himself. I wonder what others were saying to him. I wonder how many others tried to restrain him and stop him from doing it. I wonder how many were looking at the storm around them. I wonder if there were doubters on that boat. But Peter pushes through all of that and responds to the call of Jesus to come. See, walking on water is crazy. Walking on water is not normal. Walking on water doesn't make sense. Walking on the water is supernatural. Walking on water defies gravity. It defies the laws of nature. Walking on the water is just not the regular, normal thing to do, but walking on the water is where we find Jesus. Even when things don't make sense and he calls us to follow him anyway. You see, anyone can sit in a boat and watch. Anyone can sit in the boat and watch, but Peter does something that no one else dared even try. And because they didn't even try, they never got to experience what Peter experienced. And I believe that that's why the church is built on Peter. Because he understood something. You see, God can have the most amazing plans for your life. You can have received prophetic word of prophetic word about what he wants to do, and all of those are true. But my question is, what are you doing about it? How are you following him? How are you following him when things don't make sense? Greatness doesn't come by you just playing it safe all the time. Greatness comes when we're prepared to get out when things don't make sense and put our foot on the water and actually say, God, I'm going to trust you anyway. Our society says, play it safe. Our society says, have you done a risk management plan? I had to sit with the youth this week and said, have you done a risk management plan for the youth camp? Because I have to do that for insurance. That's what the world says. And because of all that thinking, sometimes we end up convincing ourselves that it's too risky. And we end up being a bunch of boat sitters. And God says, I haven't called you to be a boat sitter. I've called you to be someone who walks on water. I've called you to be someone who gets out and responds. So what water is God wanting you to step into? And my last point is simply this. Keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus when he says, come and follow him, is the answer. See, what keeps us afloat when we're walking on water and things don't make sense? Keeping your eyes fixed firmly on Jesus. As long as Peter's eyes were fixed on Jesus, as long as they were fixed on him, he was able to do the impossible, the supernatural. He was able to defy every bit of science and logic and gravity. There was something supernatural that was taking place in that moment. And the difference between Peter being fearful in the boat with the others and Peter out on the water, walking on the water, was that his gaze and his faith was fixed on Jesus. And as long as that was happening, he was able to do the supernatural and the impossible. It didn't make sense. But because his eyes were fixed, what happened when he took his eyes off Jesus? He sank. And Jesus says, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? The word translated there as doubt literally means standing uncertainly in two ways. See, faith is not about hedging our bets. I'll give you a go, God. No. Faith is about understanding and being fully persuaded that God has the power to do what he has promised. It's understanding that if God has ordained it, and the Holy Spirit affirms it, and his word speaks of it, I can take that to the bank every time. It's understanding that even when things may not make sense in the natural, knowing that God has got me as long as I keep my eyes on Jesus. You see, Jesus is teaching Peter and the disciples a powerful lesson here. Keep me at the center of your gaze and you will do miraculous things. Because he knew that very shortly after this, he would no longer be there. We don't know for how long Peter walked on water, but we do know at some point that he doubted and sank. But here's the cool thing. When he did, Jesus was there and grabbed him by the arm and pulled him back up and rescued him. And I love that. Because even when we step out in faith, and even if we were to fail, Jesus says, I've got you anyway. You see, when things don't make sense, what do? We follow him anyway. What I love about this account is that Peter's experience didn't only turn out to be a blessing for him, but it turned out to be a blessing for those that were in the boat as well. Because in Matthew 28, when they'd been in the previous storm with Jesus, they said, what kind of man is this? That was their response when he made the storm just go quiet. And what kind of man is this? And now in this account, what we see the words is that they say it changes now. It's now not what kind of man is this? Now it is truly you are the Son of God. And they worshiped him. Wow. Can you see the progression? Can you see how God, Jesus, has taken him on this journey? What I love about this is that the disciples had helped feed 5,000 people before this whole event took place. And now God enables him to go through this storm. In the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 4, they see 5,000 people get saved. And they would have remembered, as the storm of persecution broke out after that, they would have remembered moments like this. And even when things don't make sense, you fix your eyes on Jesus and you follow him